Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Magla Pillay, and for those of you who have been following this series, we welcome once again Sister Denise, who is an experienced practitioner of Raja Yoga Meditation with the Brahma Kumaris. The topic for today's show is one that's extremely interesting. It's called The Impact of Ego on One's Value System. The impact of one's ego on one's value system. Throughout this show, we've been asking you to introspect, to take a good look at your inner self, and to ask yourself, what is the state of your own conscience? What are your own personal ethics, your values, your morals? Is it working for you? Are you causing yourself harm in any way? We ask that you sit and listen to the show with an open mind in order to absorb the full impact of what a yogi with 40 years of spiritual experience behind her has to share. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us today, and a very, very warm welcome.
Thank you, Magla.
It's always a pleasure to have you on our show. Sister Denise, let's look at something called ego and its impact on one's value system. My sense is that one's ego is one's biggest challenge. Am I right, and why is that the case?
I think you are right. In the practice of Raja Yoga, as we do it in the Brahma Kumaris, we say that body consciousness, the opposite of soul consciousness, is the same thing as false ego. So it is where a person fuses their sense of identity with a mask that they've created to cover their pain.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ego is attacked in any way or feels threatened in any way, then you will feel your pain. So the person with ego has great interest in maintaining the positioning of the ego. And the great difficulty is that you cannot see your own ego, but other people can. So if they will say to you, you know, this is your ego, you will say, I don't see it. Something wrong with you. I don't have any ego, you know.
Mm.
So in order for a person to see their own ego, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do in our work that you can do to cause the ego to show itself, because unless it shows itself, you can't take it down.
And why is it necessary to take it down? The reason I'm asking this is because everyone in the world has one. Why should you take it down? Is it not there for a reason?
Well, it's there as a cover.
Of?
It covers your pain.
So ego covers pain.
Yes.
Okay. So, Sister Denise, say if somebody is a university professor and...
Well, let me say one more thing about ego, which I think is quite important, and that is that ego is the substitute for the real self. So it is an imposter, it is fake.
Mm.
So one very often will identify with one's profession.
Mm.
Then you would have ego of your profession and say, I am a university professor, say, and then you have a therefore. I am a university professor, therefore I know better than you. That doesn't necessarily follow, but the ego of that nature will create a logical inconsistency and incoherence.
What makes somebody so blind that even though they're faced with overwhelming evidence of their own ego, they still refuse to see it? What is that blindness? And why are we so reluctant to look at our inner weaknesses in context of the fact that it prevents us from being as honest as we'd like to be, as having as much integrity as we'd like to have?
Because you're fused with the ego. You think the ego is your own soul, and so therefore you defend it, you see.
Mm.
If you don't defend it, then it's losing face, it's suicide, it's awful, you know. Tremendous pain occurs when the ego is taken down. And so you do anything and everything to hold it in place.
Okay, so when someone says, I am a university professor, when someone says, I am a racing car driver, when someone says, I am a housewife, are you saying that is not actually who you are?
Well, it's not. It's not that you are a racing car driver. You are a person who races cars, but you don't do that 24 hours a day, seven days a week. You do it sometimes. But if you say that's what you are, that means you're identifying with an activity that you do to the exclusion of everything else. So then it becomes, anyway, biased and imbalanced. You identify with this ego mask, and then you have lost yourself.
Okay, so reading from that, are you saying that spirituality, one of the purposes of spirituality, is to reclaim the real self?
Totally.
Okay, now take us through that process, because most of us, from the time we wake up in the morning until the time we go to bed, we have more than one mask. Okay, I am a mother, I am a housewife, I am a part-time teacher, I am so-and-so's spouse. Okay, so take us through the process of disidentification.
When you learn about yourself as a soul, the way you do it is by saying, first of all, I am not my body. You know,
it all starts there.
It all starts there. So if I'm not my body, then what am I? You know, and my body is the costume that I put other costumes on to play roles. So I am an actor, and all the things I do are not identifications. They're characters that I play in a drama. But what I actually am is a point of light, a soul, a child of God, you see, which doesn't alter with circumstances, or whether you're dead or alive, it doesn't make any difference. Whether you're at the present time or in some other historical time, it doesn't change your identity. All of these things that we say I am are very temporary. And this is why we say these are roles. And when you stop playing your role, you go home and then you're just a soul.
How often do you do this throughout the day to create a distance between the real I and your ego masks?
Well, it's a lifetime thing. So you need to spend at least some time every day revising who you are. So that it really becomes very deep, because what has happened is for a long, long time you have thought that you are what you aren't. You have thought that you are your body. You know, a person will say, I have a female body, therefore I am female. But that therefore doesn't follow. I have a female body, therefore I am inclined to think of myself in a more female than a male way, but it doesn't follow that because I have a female body, I'm a female soul, because souls are genderless.
Soul,
and then you have to really think.
Okay.
I am genderless. So if anybody says to me, you are a woman, therefore, I will say, no, that doesn't follow. I'm a soul. I have a costume, a female costume, and so there are some things that go with that, but myself is genderless.
Mm.
And yourself is also genderless. So, you know, what is the foundation, the base on which we interact is not on the basis of gender. It has to be on the basis of something else. What do we have in common? Well, I'm a soul, you're a soul, we are brothers. So we owe each other love and regard. Like that.
Okay. So Denise, when it comes to recognizing the ego and removing the mask, is it just a question of self-talk that re-empowers you? Because you're saying, you speak about a practice of soul consciousness. Okay? You can say to yourself sincerely, I am a soul. And you can be saying it to yourself for 5 years. Consistently and sincerely, then you find yourself in a swimming pool one day in the process of drowning, and you think, oh, I'm going to die. What is that?
That means that you've understood it intellectually, but you haven't made it real.
And how do you make soul consciousness real to the extent that you're describing?
Well, you get tested, and if you are in a swimming pool and you might drown, observe your reaction to that situation. You see, and if your reaction is, I think it's my time now, I'm going to leave this body, so let me remember God, that's soul conscious. If you are terrified and say, oh, I'm going to die, it means you said it, but you didn't understand it, that I'm a soul.
Okay, so practicing soul consciousness does not mean simply saying the words. It has to become an actual experience.
Well, you get tested, and the tests will let you know whether you've really understood it, how deeply you've understood it, or is it just a nice idea, you know, that you say one thing, but the reality behind it is something altogether different, you see. It's very easy for a body-conscious soul to say, I am soul-conscious, without being soul-conscious, you see. So this is called self-deception.
What is it within an individual that causes him or her to continually sabotage himself? And by that I mean somebody who wants to be sincere but finds themselves, you know, putting on a show to hide their real feelings. Is it, is ego part of that picture as well?
Well, ego is a mask that covers your pain. Which means that it also is the anesthetic, so that you don't feel your pain, so therefore you deny that you have any pain. But if anything happens to your ego, you start feeling your pain, you're going to hold on tight to your ego, because if it falls down, then you are unbearably vulnerable, and you would do anything to not be in that situation. You know, there are situations where, you know, someone is horrifically humiliated, they lose face, all of their ego has been torn away from them, and in some cultures, in that situation, people are expected to commit suicide, like in Korea, for example. But from a spiritual point of view, if something like that happens, and you can flex with it and go with it and go into your soul consciousness, that is a gigantic victory, which leaves you with a lot of personal power and a deep understanding that really I am not this mask. This is just a mask. So you disconnect from it, use it when you want, drop it when you want.
What is the impact of having practiced soul consciousness, that your ego mask becomes, well, from what you just described, smaller? What is the impact of that on your personal set of values?
When you're fused with your ego, your logic is incorrect, which means your conscience isn't working properly, which means that you... You will justify wrong actions as right. You will deny, you will pretend, all of these things. So it really compromises your values. When you have disconnected from your mask and you know, okay, I'm an actor, I'm performing this role, and when a test comes that your performance is kind of torn away, what's behind that is a person with self-respect, so it's not a problem, because you worked through your pain, you've worked through all of your weakness, and you are a powerful soul. So whether the mask is on or off is no problem for you. It's when the soul is weak and using the mask as a substitute for the self because you can't bear the self, that's when it's a problem.
Does God have an ego?
You know, there is an expression, pure ego and impure ego. Shud ahankar, ashud ahankar in Hindi. These words are there. So it is said that self-respect, you know, what we call self-respect or honoring yourself, who you really are, that is your pure ego. What in psychiatry is called having a strong ego. And that is a really good thing. And because the word ego is used differently by different people in different contexts, it has multiple meanings. And so I very often will say, you know, that the problematical ego is the false ego, where you're identifying with something that you're not. You're thinking that you are this. It will deceive you. It will fail you. And this is why so much self-sabotage takes place.
Okay. God.
God knows who he, she is, and is not bothered when people say bad things about God, because it doesn't make any difference to God, but it makes a lot of difference to the person, you know, because then if a person is defaming God or whatever, then they are clocking up negative karma. God is stable. God exists in a state of bliss. God is always aware, I am God, and I'm your father, teacher, guru, friend, mother, provider, and you are my children, and I love you, but you don't have too much clarity about things, so I need to come as your teacher and teach you so that we can have a relationship based on something more substantial and real, which is based in spirituality rather than all of this materialism that is that has taken over everybody's thinking, you see, which has really separated people from God, separated people from their sustenance and their source, and eventually caused extreme human suffering.
Okay, so what is God's role in helping one on one's soul conscious path? How is his presence of assistance to a soul in the context of removing one's ego?
It is said for God that God creates people in his own image, and people have thought that that means God is a man. But in fact, it's much more subtle than that. The child of God would have all the characteristics of the mother and the father. And so I think the creative process, in terms of the relationship between the Supreme Soul and a soul, is that the Supreme Soul provides all the attributes of him, herself, and all the treasures, so that the soul becomes almost exactly like God, you know, a little bit different. You can never become God, but you can become very like God. At the moment, everybody's extremely unlike God. And so the influence, the kind of like an osmosis process, which is also known as the color of the company. So that being in contact with God means that you become so colored by God, that you become so like God, that you become unlike your ungodly self, and you become a more and more godly being, which also means that you become more and more in harmony with the other people, even though they're very different. But you can be in harmony as opposed to complete dissonance, which is what we are now.
Removing one's ego, he said, makes one vulnerable and causes one pain. Does that mean spirituality is a life filled with pain? Because life, and by that I mean not creating pain, but exposing existing pain. That's a very uncomfortable way to live, surely.
Well, what spirituality does is it gradually makes you immune to pain, so that you can then bear the pain of seeing how far away you have become from yourself, or how much you have been weighed down by the burden of your negative actions, which is also a kind of pain. So then you start to drop all of those things that cause pain, and because you are tolerant, because you can accommodate all these attributes about yourself, you are then able to transform. Mm. So, I mean, a person of spiritual practice does develop immunity to pain, resilience, tolerance, all of these things. We call them powers, you see. And if you don't need powers, well, you wouldn't accumulate them. You surely need them in order to get where you want to go. But it doesn't make it a bad thing.
Okay. So from what I just understood, that one has to remove one's ego, become vulnerable, face the pain. That sounds like the beginning of the journey. Where do you go from there?
Maybe that's not the beginning of the journey. The beginning of the journey is more like you have anxiety, you have confusion, etc. Okay. And you experience relief. Then you move to another stage where you start to face some, you know, obstacles. Then you realize you need to grow a bit and get a bit of power and start to accumulate some understanding, some virtues. Then you have to face some big tests, and then you become good at your tests. So there's many, many different stages along the way, but effectively you get stronger and more, you know, flexible and more comfortable as you go ahead, although your exams become more difficult as you go ahead. So you need to kind of keep up with yourself.
Okay. Yeah. Sister Denise, then what is then your end destination, if that is your journey? You said the image that comes to mind when you speak of removing ego is removing a plaster very quickly, either slowly or quickly. And then one empowers oneself, and where are you going with all of this?
Well, I think your ego is a lot more substantial than just a plaster. You know, it can be very solid, really solid, and you may have to take it down brick by brick, you know. I think that one description of your destination is to have all of your needs fulfilled by one, so that you are not using any people, places, or things to bolster you or shore you up, but you are just taking your full nurturing from one and becoming really a godlike person.
All your needs fulfilled by one. That sounds very beautiful. How is it doable when, on a human level, where you might be married, you have children, there's a daily interaction with them, you take love from them, they take love from you, you create more children, that's more love going and coming. How then, what do you do with all your earthly relationships if you're taking from one?
Well, I think there's a big difference.
No. You don't get rid of them.
No,
okay.
No.
All is well, people. Stay tuned.
Yes. You really make a difference between love and attachment.
And what is the difference between the two?
Love is a mutually beneficial giving of your qualities.
Oh.
And attachment is where you leech on to someone. I told you earlier this word, glom on.
Yes.
And you start sucking them. That's not love, but very often people call it love. That's attachment, which is a vice. Love is when you are sharing of yourself. And, you know, there's a give and take, but that your ultimate source of nurture is the Supreme Being. And you're not going to use or abuse any of the people who are your intimate relatives and close connections. You're not going to use them to sustain yourself, because then you are draining them of their energy, and that would not be spiritually correct.
Okay, so somebody who's spiritually enlightened knows how to use their energy properly. Say a bit more about that, because draining somebody of your energy is not something that we normally think about, because we just, you know, I have a friend I go visit, we enjoy each other's company, you come back home.
But you see, it's not that you go to suck their blood and come home.
Maybe the other person thinks I'm sucking their blood. How do I know, Sister Denise, whether I'm a vampire or not? How do
well,
I know?
Well, I think if somebody
I'm being vampired on. Count Dracula comes to mind.
If someone feels that they're being drained by your contact with you, they probably are. And they will probably find ways to limit that contact. But when you force yourself upon a person because you're really using them for your own nourishment, then that becomes a real violation. That's a real negative karma. And so we have, you know, some credit with each other. We're willing to give a bit, take a bit, like that, share. But there's a kind of natural limit beyond which it becomes incorrect.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for. So on that immortal note, we'll have to call today's talk to an end. Extremely, extremely interesting. I've never heard anyone say one has to learn how to die, but this show is nothing if not educational. I do thank Sister Denise for joining us today and sharing her exceptional depth and wisdom. As you can see, she has thought about that which she has shared today very deeply. I hope it has touched not just your head, but your heart. I hope that you found something in this show that is of value to you. And of particular interest to me is the fact that there is almost like a spiritual responsibility on each of our shoulders to overcome our own ego, not for just our own selves, but for the people we love and the world. It's a very, very deep message to face your pain and become a better person as a result of it. A very deep and profound message, and I hope that you take the power that is shared today and make it a permanent part of your life. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, and goodbye.